everybody. This is Pam coming to you from the podcast, Women Who Stutter, Our Stories, which can be found directly accessed to the blog, Make Room for the Stuttering, and it's also a free download on iTunes. As always, I have the privilege and the pleasure of having yet another amazing woman join us on today's program. So I want to say hello to Hannah. Hey, Hannah, how's it going?
Hi, Pam. I'm good. How are you doing?
Good, good. Here on the Northeast, I'm sure you probably are too, bracing for yet some more snow.
I haven't even paid attention the last couple of days.
We're supposed to get like 3 to 7 inches tomorrow, and I am so sick of this already.
Yeah. Well, we had those couple of nice days, like it was 65 or so, and now it's back to cold.
Yeah, we did too, and it's just like, wow, this is really weird weather. This is like global warming at its worst, I guess.
Yep, extremes.
Yeah, so anyway, to get us started with the program, why don't you formally introduce yourself and tell us who you are and where you're from and what you're up to these days.
Okay. My name is Hannah Lede. I'm originally from rural Maine. I have been living in central New Jersey for 4.5 years, I think it is now. I came here because I married a man who stutters. And nowadays I'm working as a direct support person for young women who stutter. Young women with developmental disabilities.
Okay.
I'm heavily involved in the NSA. I'm a chapter leader here in central New Jersey. And I have a couple of other, at least one other leadership position. And those things keep me busy.
It sounds it. And maybe that was a Freudian slip that you made when you said that you work with young women who stutter.
I know.
Because I worked for a while with people with developmental disabilities. And surprisingly, during the short year and a half that I worked there, I ran across 3 people who stutter, who also had Down syndrome. So it's not unusual for people with some type of developmental disability to also have some incidences of stuttering. So
yeah, you're right, because recently I've been contacted by a few people who have, you know, several issues going on. In fact, these people who contacted me were looking for stuttering support.
Oh.
Just told me, you know, a little bit about their other issues also. So, you're right. Sometimes there's multiple things going on.
Yeah, yeah. And interestingly, when I approached the powers that be at the nonprofit that I was working with, one of their first reactions was when I suggested, has anybody thought about, you know, involving these folks in support or maybe even speech therapy? They didn't come right out and say it, but the feeling that I got was, well, stuttering is the least of their problems. You know, and I was like, wow, like, how do you know, like, it's not bothering them? Like, how do you know they wouldn't want to, you know, have therapy or be in a support group? And when I found, you know, when I talked to them and disclosed that I stutter, it turned out that all 3 people were like, yeah, we really don't like how other people react when we stutter, and getting some support would be helpful. So yeah. I was able to arrange that, and they participated in the same therapy program that I was for about a year. So,
you know, I'm thinking of 2 people who contacted me recently, and these people were actually contacting me on behalf of these 2 other people who stutter. And but it was kind of the reverse situation. These 2 people were inquiring of me about the support group because they actually felt that the stuttering was more challenging for these people than their other issues.
Mm.
And so they were, you know, acting on behalf of them to try to get more information. So, you know, that's kind of the reverse of what you just said. But these people were actually thinking, you know what, these people really need help with their stuttering.
Mm-hmm.
On maybe foremost at this point.
Oh wow, yeah. So do you know how that turned out? Did they wind up getting some support or at least get pointed in the right direction?
Well, I mean, they were contacting me to attend the NSA chapter meeting, and they haven't gotten there yet. This was very recently,
mm-hmm.
So I intend to stay in touch with them and hope they will come to the meeting at least.
Mm, good. So how did you wind up becoming a chapter leader for the NSA?
George has had, my husband George has had, he's been involved in the stuttering self-help community for years and years and years and years. And for probably a decade almost, he has been going to speak to the SLP classes at Kane University.
Oh.
So the professor that he has that connection to, she invited me to come as well once I had moved to New Jersey. And then in, it was probably the summer of 2008, she asked me and another young man if we wanted to start a chapter. So we did.
And the rest is history.
Yeah. Yep. And yep, we've been going for about 2.5 years now, and actually it's just the other night we had a fantastic meeting. So
oh, awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Now, how did that come to be that she asked you? Because it was my understanding that for a long time you were covert with your stuttering. So how did the professor even know to ask you?
Like I said, through George, she knew that he had married somebody who stutters. And I was willing to go to the classes with him and talk. And, Pam, when I finally decided to get help with my stuttering,
mm-hmm.
I pretty much, shortly after I started seeing my speech therapist up in Maine, I was pretty willing right off to, just go for it and start exposing myself more about my stuttering.
Mm-hmm.
So I made that transition pretty quickly because I think I was just so bottomed out that I said, this is it. I can't do this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta come out with this and address it and face it and confront it.
Now, how long ago was that when you finally made that decision and began to embrace your stuttering?
It was about almost 7 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, and I just immediately I started seeing a speech therapist, and she started giving me, she invited me to go to NSA chapter meetings in Maine because she was also the chapter leader.
Mm-hmm.
And she just was giving me a lot of information, and that's actually how I found out about the retreat that I went to in Connecticut for people who stutter, which is where I met George.
Oh, a retreat for people who stutter. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it's no longer happening, however, but it was hosted by and organized by a group called Speak Easy, which has nothing to do with the Speech Easy device.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the name of a group that still meets in New Jersey. And that's where George got started in stuttering self-help with this group, Speak Easy. He started 25 years ago, I think.
Is it kind of Toastmasters a little bit?
No, it's not. It's stuttering support.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's kind of a small organization and pretty much New Jersey centered. Although in the past it was bigger, and they do have a symposium still, and people come. It's not real big though.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually very small. But anyways, I drove myself to that retreat, and which was like a big trip, you know. It was the first time I did a sort of long distance car driving trip on my own, and the floodgates opened. And that was like the beginning of getting involved with, you know, larger numbers of people who stutter.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since then, I've been getting more and more involved, and you've seen me at NSA conferences, and, you know, I'm in it.
which is where I belong. I guess so, because that paper that you wrote for the International Stuttering Awareness Day online conference last October was really powerful and insightful and pretty amazing for a lot of people, and it must have been as much so for yourself too, to, you know, tell your story like that and share it so openly, huh?
Yeah. Thank you, Pam. I mean, you know, we were just talking about this at the meeting, our meeting the other night. Just one of the students actually asked this really good question of, she asked us, what was the turning point for you that led you to, you know, take, I'm forgetting exactly how she phrased it, but, you know, that led you to the place where you really wanted to take charge of your life with stuttering.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, some people said they hadn't really gotten there yet, but some people sort of seem to interpret it as their starting point was when they bottomed out.
Mm-hmm.
So I mention this because I think that for many of us, when we finally, whatever makes us finally reach out, once we do and we start meeting other people who stutter, it's just, you know, it's life changing.
Yeah.
So most of us, you know, rarely encountered or never encountered anybody else who stuttered. And so I was thinking this afternoon a little bit about it wasn't until I met my speech therapist, who was also a person who stutters. I think she was the first woman that I ever met who stuttered. I had met a few boys and young men.
Mm-hmm.
But I was thinking about it. Wow, but, you know, until then, I had never met another female who stuttered.
You know, it's funny. I remember somebody saying to me, like, I don't know, a year or two ago, that because this person was a male who stutters, he said to me kind of the same thing. He said he had never met a female who stuttered. And so, therefore, he thought that women didn't stutter. So it's interesting that you bring that up, because obviously we are the minority within the minority of people who stutter, and sometimes it can be so empowering to finally meet another person who sounds like us and is like us and has those feelings. And so how interesting that when you finally make that decision to go into speech therapy, your therapist is a woman who stutters. Wow. Right. That must have really made a difference for you.
Yeah, it did. It really did. And, you know, it was just one of those moments in life, you know,
mm-hmm.
like this is, I'm so fortunate that I met her, and she, it was my third round of speech therapy in my life, but she was the first one who, you know, really immediately was addressing all my emotional baggage,
mm-hmm.
and not allowing me to be stuck there, but
right.
but addressing it. And whereas when I was younger and I had speech therapy two other times, there was nothing about that. It was just the physical aspect of it. And I was never able to, you know, change my stuttering much with just approaching it that way.
So what was it like for you before you had that, as you call it, the bottoming out moment, and you decided to embrace stuttering? What was it like for you being covert and feeling like you couldn't talk about it and not talking about it?
Right. It was, you know, just complete isolation and feeling like nobody could possibly understand what I was going through. And yet, you know, and I wasn't talking about it. And just feeling completely alone. And I was very isolated. I was thinking about a few things that people had said to me over the years. And like, talk about being misinterpreted because of your quietness. And one friend who knew me for about 15 years, she admired me because I didn't, because I remained quiet and I didn't get provoked by situations around me. You know, in the meantime, of course, you know, internally, yeah, I may have been quiet to the room around me, but internally, you know, I was going through all kinds of stuff in response to things that were happening around me.
Wow, but that's a pretty cool thing that she said. Have you ever been able to tell her why you really were so quiet?
Yeah, we did talk about it once, but only, like, really only once, and we didn't explore it too far. It was still not a real comfortable topic for me, but I did tell her that that, you know, most of the research was revealing that stuttering is neurological, and she was absolutely amazed by that. And her response was such amazement, it kind of gave me a clue, like, yeah, most people, you know, they had, you know, most people have, you know, no idea. That's, you know, they have all these other interpretations. But you might recall a little bit about my story, that I was living way out in the woods in Maine. And I was, faced a, you know, it was a pretty harsh existence, although there was a lot of beauty in it. But I was thinking the other day about like what I had to do in the winter, and because I had to hike to my place, and so, you know, it was cold, middle of winter, high snow banks, and I'd go home in the dark at night, and part of my procedure was I would drive my car down to these railroad tracks and load up my sled to haul my supplies in, because I had to hike. So one night, so often this crazy person, this guy that lived on the other side of the pond, he would sometimes shine the spotlight on me and sometimes shoot his guns up in the air.
Oh my gosh.
And so one night my car broke down right there. And so I had to push it off to the side of the road and hope I got it off the road far enough. And I just had to leave it there, and I knew that I would have to hike out the next day, which is my day off, and I always tried not to have to do an extra trip out. It was a lot of effort. And so, you know, with all that going on around me, what do you think I was worried about the most?
Being found out that you stuttered?
Well, the phone call I was going to have to make the next day.
Oh, about the car.
Yeah.
Because of stuttering?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, I could endure all that, you know, harsh reality, this guy shooting guns off up here. But I was worried about the phone call I was going to have to make the next day.
Now, were you living there alone?
No, I had a couple of friends out there at different times, but But it was, and but it was far out in the woods on the other side of this pond, which there was no road to or anything. And that was, you know, that was during a period of my life where at my job I had been told that they didn't want me to answer the phone. So I and I didn't have, we didn't have any utilities out there, so I didn't have a phone. And so for 5 years, I literally, you know, rarely spoke on the phone because, you know, they didn't want me to talk on the phone at work. And I only used the phone on rarely when I would make an effort to get to a phone and call my family or call the student loan people. But so, you know.
Now, did you purposely choose that environment to live in to kind of create isolation for yourself?
Well, I think it was, you know, it was kind of unconsciously related to this, you know, to stuttering and feeling like I really had no, you know, didn't belong anywhere. And during those years, well, through most of my young adulthood, I really was just bouncing around, surviving, and, you know, just living wherever I could, really. And I guess this is a little part of my history. Like, after college, you know, I never gave it a thought to interview for jobs or to get career counseling or anything like that because of my speech. And but what I did do is I accepted a 9-month apprenticeship on farm. And then I had gotten this part-time job at a company that harvested wildcrafted edible seaweed. And this is in rural down east Maine. And I was young and I was just really surviving.
Mm-hmm.
And so my job there, this is the place where I didn't talk on the phone though, but you know, I allowed my job description to kind of become, you know, this person. I didn't communicate with the public at all. But as has been typical of my life, I have almost always ended up in leadership positions, which is, I did become the production leader there, production manager. And so I was communicating, you know, in the workplace, but not with the public. And I was production manager and warehouse manager, and I was kind of chuckling with you about this. I drove the forklift, I operated the forklift, loaded trucks, these truck drivers that came in.
Oh my goodness.
And especially in the summertime, you know, I would often be up there on the forklift in skirts and dresses.
Okay, really making it evident that you were a woman in a traditionally male field.
But, you know, during, you know, I think back on some of those exchanges when I had to talk to all these truck drivers and, you know, I minimized my talk because I was still, you know, pretty covert. And, but I did when I finally, like, so, but then, so somewhere along in there, I bottomed out and I moved onto the road and I got a computer and that's when I reached out and contacted this woman that I knew was an SLP and, you know, asked if she knew anybody who worked with adults who stutter, and she did. And so, at that point, that's when I started really making a lot of changes. And, you know, part of how she was helping me become, you know, more desensitized. And I would pick like one or two people at a time to, you know, start stuttering a little bit with. And so let's see, was it, I think it was about a year. Yeah. Like a year later in 2005, when I was preparing to go to my first NSA conference in Chicago, I told the UPS guy that I was going on vacation, and I told him what I was doing, and I just did small things like that, you know, very small steps, and that's, you know, what helps me.
Now you've used the term bottomed out a couple times as your propellant to change. What exactly does that mean for you, bottoming out? Did something happen, or did you, I mean, what does that mean?
Yeah, it, for me, it was, I couldn't deny anymore that I was limiting my life and how painful that was to know that I was capable of much more and that I desired more contact and more communication. And I just, you know, the pain was too great. And, you know, I was thinking about, and even still at that point, but it was really noticeable in high school and then all the way through the rest of my life until around then. And even now I struggle with it a little, but I've gotten much better about it. But I never felt that I could truly participate or be part of any groups, and I was kind of a part of many groups, but this is how I describe it. I was always like out on the outer rim of the bowl. Mm. I never really felt I could be in the bowl with everybody else.
Mm-hmm. What an odd feeling to have. You had that feeling like in every group that you were in for a while?
Yes, always. And even, and so I was never like really part of or immersed in any, you know, any group. I was on the edges of different groups, different things I was interested in. Mm-hmm. And even at the point in my late 30s when I reached out to the speech therapist, I was still having that kind of experience. I really didn't feel I could fully participate in things and with people, even though I had things in common with people on certain topics and interests. I would kind of just be on the edges. And to me, it felt like being on the outer rim of a bowl. And I'm much more, you know, I push myself more now to be involved and to, you know, do inner self-talk to feel involved, but it still is hard.
Mm. Well, yeah, I mean, when we have these habits ingrained for years and years, you know, it takes years and years for us to change those habits. And, you know, even for myself, who I consider to be pretty open and out there these days, there's still times where that shame comes creeping back in very unexpectedly, you know, and then, you know, I have the inner talk myself, like, you know, you're not supposed to feel shame. You know, you're over this, but you know, we're not. You know, it's a human part of us. It's our vulnerability, and you know, it is. It takes. I think it's lifelong. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, and I think it takes great diligence to change these, you know, behaviors that are so long-term ingrained in us. And it just takes, you know, great attention, I feel, for me, to, you know, make changes that really take effect.
Mm-hmm.
I was also thinking a little bit about I'm in this right now. I'm in a pretty good phase right now with my stuttering and how I feel about myself. But like, I'll be thinking that, and I feel, you know, I think, wow, I really made some progress, and then like, you know, the next day I'm kind of back a few steps. But even that's better. And I want to share one thing that happened just like about a week ago. I went to a new primary care doctor, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I went early because I knew I'd have to fill out all these papers, and I still felt kind of pressed, like I didn't get it all filled out. And so then I was talking to her, and I said, oh, you know, I forgot to write on there that, you know, I've had this lifelong stutter. And I said, well, I've had speech therapy, but more importantly, I'm involved in the stuttering self-help community. I talked about being a chapter leader. And she, you know, she really acknowledged me and complimented me for confronting it and for, you know, taking an active role in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, thank you. And I really felt it, and because I really wanted to accept it and acknowledge that she was acknowledging me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel right now I'm just feeling so that is so important. Because I'm feeling really strong that we people who stutter are courageous, strong people. And I, when somebody acknowledges what I'm dealing with and that, you know, they compliment me, I want to feel it.
Mm-hmm. And can you allow yourself to feel it?
Yeah. I'm in this phase right now where I am. Yeah.
That's cool. Cool. Because I used to, and still sometimes have a hard time receiving praise or compliments from others and really letting it in and feeling it, because for so long, you know, as a person who stutters and, you know, just having esteem issues, I feel like I never deserved recognition or deserved
right.
somebody paying a compliment to me. So my reactions were to either blow it off, or sometimes, and it still happens, I get welled up and I get emotional and I get teary-eyed, like, because I'm just like so moved by somebody saying that, because I'm so not used to that happening or
right.
wasn't used to it. So that's good that you can let that in and feel it, because you're right. We are very courageous people because we put our vulnerabilities right out there.
Right. Yep.
And that's not always easy.
Yeah. Yep. And I think this feeling that I'm having and this ability to receive that, it's also coinciding with I'm able right now. I'm in a phase where in different speaking situations, and I'm stuttering, I feel no need, no obligation to explain it.
That's great.
It's, you know, I'm like, hey, this is self-apparent.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just doing it. And because I for quite a while, you know, I would mention it up front, and that's good too. That's totally good too. But right now I'm just in this different place that I'm not needing to mention it or explain it.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to share with you this other experience, but I'm kind of jumping around a bit. But
well, that's okay, because I'm going to jump around and ask something that I wanted to ask. When
yeah.
you mentioned earlier that, you know, you went to this retreat in Connecticut and it was like this big move for you to do, and that's where you met George, and then subsequently you wound up moving from the woods in Maine to New Jersey. So what was it about George? I mean, was it love at first sight? Was it the fact was it the fact that he stuttered? Yeah, I'm just curious about that. We never talked about that, and if you don't want to, if you don't want to reveal that, that's fine. But I'm just curious.
No, it's kind of funny because, I mean, George and I kind of joke about it sometimes and laugh. Like, and George is very outgoing and like. Mm-hmm. Like everything's out there for him.
He's very overt. But,
And but no, very definitely not. We weren't like it was not love at first sight. In fact, we probably were both like, well, you know, this person's a you know a lot different than me. And but and a funny part of our story is like I really wouldn't give George my phone number for like 9 months.
Ugh.
And then even like. After I spent some time with him in Chicago, I still wouldn't give him my phone number. And but then I did. I emailed him. I said, oh, you know, what the heck? Here's my phone number. I was very cautious. And I, but it was, you know, I knew it was just such a big risk and change. And, you know, but, yeah, I think, you know, one thing about George, you know, the fact that he stuttered and it was just a very safe person, and George has a huge heart, and I recognize that. That I did recognize quickly.
Mm-hmm. But what? But what? What allowed you to make such a drastic move from Maine, the woods of Maine, to New Jersey? I mean, that's where he lived, obviously.
Yeah. Well, okay. At that point. I had moved out of the woods and I was living on the road.
Okay.
But I you know, I didn't really have, I don't know. I was bouncing around my whole life, mm-hmm. and I didn't really have an anchor. And, so maybe George represented an anchor.
Because I know sometimes when people meet and they, you know, fall in love and they decide this is it and they're going to get married, sometimes there's a compromise made in, you know, where the couple's going to live. And, you know, for you to just uproot and move to New Jersey, that was, that was a huge move for you to make in many different aspects.
Oh, yeah, it was really huge. And it took me a good couple of years to really adjust. And, we had to make compromises. And it was difficult, but we just kept working on it. And just all things considered, both of our circumstances just seemed like the best thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, but... Yeah, it was huge adjustment, and but that is something I don't know. I guess it's part of my personality. I've done sort of. I always feel like I have done things like that in my life. Like I plunge into things,
mm-hmm.
and then I have to process them afterwards. But even in regards to stuttering and speech, like when I had to make presentations in college, you know, I never, you know, asked for any special exceptions or anything. I would just plunge into these presentations and stutter incredibly. And
even though you were covert.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, we could get into the discussion of, you know, the full discussion of the full definition of covert. But, you know, at times I was not able to be completely physically covert,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so sometimes I would, I had to make a couple of presentations in college, and you know, it was just excruciating.
Mm-hmm.
I've done a few. Well, even like moving out into the woods, or I did one semester in of college in El Paso, Texas, and you know, and I do these big things, which. Well, I mean, it has been said to me that, you know, it's pretty courageous, even as a person who stutters, that you've made these big moves. But I do them, and then I go through all these like crises around it afterwards. But sometimes I wish. Sometimes I say, but I don't seem to reap the rewards of it, though, like the self-confidence that one might gain from such things.
Mm-hmm.
But that's
well,
getting better.
You must be nearer to the self-confidence place because you're doing this. And
yeah.
I mention that because, you know, I had asked you some time ago if you'd be willing to share your story. And it was, you know, quite a it didn't come easy for you to agree to do this, to publicly share your story. So I'm interested, like, why did you decide that you're finally ready?
Yeah, you know, actually, as you know, as you and I have discussed a little bit, I even made the comment, you know, I said, well, I don't really have a story. Mm-hmm. And that comes from this place in me that, like, I guess measuring myself in terms of, you know, I don't really have a big career or anything, but through talking to you a little and thinking about some things that you have said to me, you know, I realize, but you know what? Everybody has a story, and even my story might resonate to somebody.
Absolutely.
And at times I have called myself, I'm a Jill of many trades, master of men. And there are those of us out there, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I mean, why would you think that you didn't have a story? Just the incredible taking the plunge, immersion into several of the things that you've done is a story.
Yeah.
You know that, right?
Yeah, I'm finally getting to know that. And I think the difficulty I've had in recognizing that comes from this old, old, deep place of, you know, thinking that, probably, you know, measuring myself a lot by my speech, but through my life, like, I've always been this person that, even though even as a child and younger, I've excelled at many things and done many things, but of course I'm human, so I'm not perfect, but I focus on, you know, the flaws and my mistakes, or, you know, as one could say, like, you know, the one stutter out of, but then there'll be 10 fluent words, and I'm focused on the one stutter, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I have, like, damn it, like, an exaggerated version of that is when I was 10 years old, I won the New England Individual Gymnastics Championship.
Oh, my God.
Right? And the state. But I'm standing there with, you know, on the trophy podium, and I'm not smiling because running through my head are the mistakes I made. And my sister yells out, "Smile, Hannah."
So it's deep seated. It's deep seated, that need to be perfect.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I seem to find that as a theme with women who stutter. We tend to have some perfectionist qualities about ourselves because maybe there's just always been that need or that desire to compensate for the speech. You mentioned your sister just briefly, and we're going to have to wrap up soon. Time always flies when we're mm-hmm. when we're chatting. But what was your family support like growing up as a kid stuttering?
My nobody in my family ever talked about my stuttering. Mm-hmm. And you know, I feel that that's, you know, how a person can end up, one way that a person can end up feeling just so alone with it. Mm-hmm. And and in a child's mind, making up, you know, trying to make, you know, trying to understand it and coming up with all kinds of inaccurate ideas about oneself as a child, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And but finally, when I was 16, my mother did take me to a speech therapist. But, you know, we never talked about stuttering openly and how it was affecting me. But she finally took me at that point because I was withdrawing more and more and more.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the first time I had speech therapy. And then I had it again when I was 25. But it wasn't till I had it like every 10 years. So it was on the third try. Mm-hmm. But... and it's only been since, this, like the last, 7 years or so. It's back like then when I approached the speech therapist that time and really brought it out into the open that I've had some discussions with family members.
Mm-hmm.
It's still not an easy topic, but I've had a few breakthroughs.
Mm-hmm. Has anybody in your family been to see the movie The King's Speech?
My mother has been to it.
Yeah, what did she think? Did she share with you what she thought?
Yes. Interestingly, I thought it was kind of interesting. The part that stood out to her was apparently what stood out to her was that, like, the kind of the tension between the king and his therapist for at the beginning when they were trying to establish their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
She said something like until he finally allowed himself to go or something like that. But it kind of in the last couple of months I've had some kind of interesting discussions with my mother because my mother had a stroke in December.
Oh.
It was her second stroke, and this time it really affected her speech. And it was also, the stroke was in her frontal lobe, which affects the emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So at first, she was very emotional and crying a lot, and she was having serious speech issues. And I did talk to her during that phase, and she was telling me that the words were in her mind, but she couldn't get them out, and she was crying a lot. And she said, now I know what Hannah's been going through her whole life. But she has made incredible, she's made, like, really rapid improvements.
Oh, well, and that's good.
In fact, there was one point when her speech therapist told her that she had spontaneous resolution or spontaneous healing of the issues. And I was talking to another person, so I was like, wow, I wish it was so easy for us.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, did she say, when your mom said, now I know what Hannah had been going through, did she say that to you or to somebody else?
She was saying it to all my siblings.
Wow.
But
she didn't say it to you?
No, she did. But she also said it to me, yes.
Wow. Yep. Wow.
Yep.
Big insight. Big insight.
Yeah. Right. I know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So, what's it like today, now, to be stuttering openly and being in that good space with it?
It's really, it's just so different. And I have to say that when I spoke to a class of graduate SLP students, I do it every semester. And, you know, I said at the last one that I did, I said, you know, I'm just in such a different place now with my stuttering and myself. And I said, you know, I'm kind of tired of my story, but but I said to them, but I feel obligated to also share with you, you know, the depths of what I have been through in my life with it, because that's the only way that you're going to learn how serious it can be to live with stuttering.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm in a much better place now, but as we all have been, we've been to the depths, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But like I mentioned at one point in this conversation, you know, I do, you know, even recently, I had, like, there was one day I was in this class and I was stuttering, and And I didn't care. And I felt no need to explain it or say anything, right? Then, like, about a week later, I was in the exact same situation, and I was stuttering, and I was kind of 2 steps back in my attitude, you know? So it's day to day.
And it's human.
Yes.
It's what we do. It's those everyday different feelings and emotions that makes us human, but that also makes stuttering so complex.
Yeah.
Well, Hannah, I just want to say thank you for sharing this story, because it is a story, and I know it takes courage, and you've done a lot of courageous things in your life, including sharing your story. So thank you for taking the time to be so authentic.
You're welcome, Pam, and thank you for inviting me to do this.
It's been awesome, and this has been Women Who Stutter, Our Stories.